Good morning. How's everyone doing this beautiful Sunday morning? Yeah, it's nice. Weather's starting to warm up a little bit. I think it was raining last time I was here. So as Michael said, I did bring Ashley. There has been a lot of requests for me to have my children participate in service, and I'm not going to be here for on the schedule as of right now, although I've begged and pleaded when Pastor Steve comes, if they need a sub, I'm available. So maybe I'll spread the good word and have me come in too. Thanks. So unfortunately, I told Emily, my oldest, that you all requested her as well. But she was in the walkers and infants room. So Cornerstone usually has daycare or corner kids or Sunday school, whatever you want to call it, on 9:30 and 11 o'clock. Well, they moved it all to 9:30, and they didn't realize the abundance of babies. And so my daughter was in baby heaven, and so the babies went out, and she's there. I tried. Say, this is our last time, and she's like, they need me. So she's having fun getting her baby fix on for a while. So speaking of last weekend, I went to the movies. How many of you like going to the movies? Not a little bit. My daughters and my husband love going to the movies. I could take it or leave it. A lot of times they go and leave me, and I get to read a book, which is my favorite. I love reading. And so last weekend, I promised I would go. It was kind of a rainy day. I was feeling being a good parent, and said, I will go with you. But my daughters could not decide on, or could not agree on a movie. And so I actually took Ashley and her friend to one movie, and my husband took my other daughter to another movie, and it took us forever to try to line up time so we could all ride together, which the movie theater wasn't that far away. But so we ended up going, and one wanted to see a comedy, and one wanted to see kind of more of an action movie. And I know there's so many different genres of movies that are out there, and also it kind of depends on what kind of mood you're in as well, as to what movie you select. But one, I would say, a movie that always gets me, I'll always pick no matter what kind of mood I'm in, a movie or a book, is a murder mystery. How many people like murder mysteries, either books or movies? Yeah. It's probably why my all-time favorite board game is Clue. If you remember that, it's actually coming back. They do have a new version. We bought it for our kids for Christmas one year, so it's more of an updated version of Clue. But I always like to try to figure out who did it, or who done it, or however you want to say it, right? Who's the bad guy? Who's the enemy within it? And a lot of times, in the beginning of either the book or the movie I'm watching, it's obvious. You know exactly, like, that person's acting a little funny, right? So you've got that person pegged, that's the enemy in it. Then come to find out they're a good person, right? And then you think, well, it's the lawyer, or it's the neighbor, or all of a sudden halfway through the movie, the person that you thought was dead comes back to life. And there's a lot of different things that just keeps you guessing throughout the whole thing. And the whole time you're trying to guess who the enemy is. All right, so I want to welcome you to week one of the series, Know Your Enemy. And right off the bat, you may be thinking, I don't have any enemies. You're such a great and wonderful person, and everyone loves you. No matter where you go, you drive perfectly. You always follow all the rules. And so you might need to pay the most attention to this, because we all have enemies, and they come in various forms. You know, if you turn on the news, our world is full of conflict. I made the mistake of opening up my news app on my phone the other day, and I just got into just one after another of going through it. It was just terrible. All the things that's happening right now. We had somebody local in the community, their 17-year-old daughter was driving their 11-year-old son, and there was an accident, and the 17-year-old is awake, but the list of broken things on her, from collarbones to femurs to whatever, I just kept reading, like, when is it going to stop? And then the son is still in a coma at Helen DeVos Children's Hospital right now, or the 11-year-old, right? And this family is grieving. They've got 6 more kids at home, so they have a lot of kids, you know? And it's just like one thing after another, and I'm just, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, I kind of, like, I'm looking at all the wars that's happening, or all the shootings, or all of these different things, and I think about, my soul starts hurting inside when I'm reading it. And it really affects our soul, all this conflict that we have. And as Christians, we know that love tears down everything. one of the greatest commandment, part of it that Jesus gave us, is to love our neighbor. But does that mean that we don't have any enemies? In fact, Jesus tells us we do have enemies. So who is our enemy? In this series, we're going to dive deep into what this question means. Is it the spiritual world? Is it the world we live in? Is it the flesh? And more importantly, what does having an enemy mean for the life of a Jesus follower? And here's one thing as I was going through and I was preparing for today that really hit me. Our enemy knows us. He knows us. Do we know him? Be important for us to kind of know him a little bit because of how well he knows us. So, a lot of Christians might paint the picture of the enemy as Satan. I mean, how much do we really know about him? Is he this snake? When you picture who he is he a snake? Does he have horns and he's more of a red monster in your mind when you picture him? Is he this evil person that has a pitchfork that just rules all over people in hell and makes their life miserable? Does he have unlimited power? Does he even exist at all? And today we're going to do something we rarely do. In my almost 41 years of life, I have never had this happen. We're going to devote all of today talking about the devil, talking about Satan. In church, in God's holy place, we're going to spend the next 20 or so minutes, less than that, talking about, people are like, wait, do the math, we've got communion. Okay, so we're going to be talking about Satan today. And here's the interesting thing to think about, too. He has put a target on all of our backs because we love Jesus. He is our enemy, and he gets to know us and gets to know our weaknesses and gets to know all the things that he can do. He is enemy number one. And a lot of times, he makes us feel like we're under attack. I felt that way when I was reading through all the news, maybe not me personally, but that the world was under attack. And I'm sure many of you can probably relate. Maybe you've planned this wonderful family vacation or a reunion to go see your children in another state and somebody gets COVID or somebody gets sick and all your plans are ruined. The one thing you've been looking forward to for many, many years, right? Or tuition is due for college. And the washing machine breaks. The car breaks down. Someone you love gets really, really sick. And we feel like we can't have any more bumps on the road. We just can't handle any more bumps. We get a roadblock. So much against us. And it's discouraging. We've been there. It feels like we are under attack by the enemy. And I hear people saying that a lot. I've said it a lot. Actually, here at Faith, I've said that, where I feel like we've been attacked by the enemy. And that we've got all this spiritual warfare coming against us. But I think we got to be careful too. I do think it happens, but we don't want to give him too much credit, too much power for what's happening in our world. I'm not sure that the enemy gave the person that you love COVID or made your car break down or your washing machine break down or any of these other things. But when high anxiety gets a hold of us because of our finances, or we get stressed out and we get angry and we lash out at the people we love or the people that are good, we have to be careful because the enemy is near. So the feeling of attack is real. It is real. And it's actually in the Bible of this feeling. So I want us to start back way, way, way back at the beginning of Genesis. And even if you're not very familiar with the Bible, I'm sure you're familiar with Genesis chapter 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created. And I think I actually did a message here a little while ago about this and about Genesis. And it was, he created it very good. Remember we talking about that? It wasn't just good. It was very good. It was perfect. It was the most beautiful thing he ever did. God created it very good. And if you want to read through it, a lot of times we go through the details, and on this day he created the heavens and earth, and on this day, but if we just read through it and see the love that God is pouring into the creation, he is doing. Go back and read chapters 1 and 2 of Genesis, which actually Genesis means beginning. Fact, tidbit, I'm not sure if you knew that, but Genesis is translated to the beginning. But let's fast forward to Genesis chapter 3, and something changes. We're introduced to a creature, and the Bible's first portrait of evil, and it's described as a snake or serpent back in Genesis. And I'm not sure it's a kind of like garden snake that surprises us when we're gardening, or we have a pond across the street. I didn't know we had snakes until this year, when all of a sudden they're sunning themselves, so I'm no longer going near that pond because they are huge. I've never seen them that big. So they live in the water in the pond. But this snake can talk, and he knows God. Okay, this evil person, evil thing knows God. He can talk, and he's more like a person, and I'm not sure he's a snake at all, but maybe some spiritual, from the spiritual realm, this creature that we perhaps don't really, we can't fathom, or we've never really seen a picture of. And we'll be talking a little bit more about metaphors about it here in a minute, but here's why this is important. This creature is in God's creation, and we can see very quickly that he's already rebelled against God. We don't know why the snake has rebelled in chapter 3, but we do know that this creature's purpose is to ruin God's good world for other creatures and to try to lead it back to chaos and to darkness. So as the story continues in Genesis 3, we get the famous Adam and Eve story where humans join the rebellion by disobeying God because this creature, the snake or the serpent, has deceived and has tempted and deceived and has joined. So now the spiritual rebellion and the human rebellion are now combined together. That doesn't mean we're on the same team. And Jesus describes the enemy in this way. The thief, the devil, the enemy, sole purpose is to come only to steal and kill and destroy. In John 10:10. Sole purpose. Reason for existence is to destroy. And to understand this better, I think it's important for us to give our enemy a name. And a lot of us, first will come to mind, Satan or devil. Those are kind of some of the different names that we give. Here are some other various names that you might find. So we have Satan, devil, morning star, tempter, deceiver, dragon, old serpent, accuser, Beelzebub and Beelzebul. Those are kind of fun to say. I like those last two. And one could argue that Beelzebub is referring to an Old Testament king, the Lord of the Flies. But in the New Testament, the name Beelzebul is a name the Pharisees use. And when you translate it in Hebrew, it's Lord of Dung. D-U-N-G, Dung. For those of you that know what that means, it's probably the most fitting name for Satan. There are also many other metaphors to describe father of lies, ruler of the world, that one's interesting, god of this age, roaring lion, prince of darkness, god of the air. And there are literally dozens and dozens more when you read through the scriptures and you're able to see some of these metaphors or these names used to describe. But you get the point. We're talking about the same person. And I want us to pause again and think about that. The same person. The enemy is not a thing. He's not a thing. He is not an idea. He is a persona, and he has a name. And I want to zoom in on the two most common names that we tend to use, which we talked about here a little bit before. This is in the Old Testament, which means the devil or the slanderer. So the devil means the slanderer in the Old Testament in Greek. And the second is Satan, which is found in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And in Hebrew, he's called Ha-Satan, or the adversary. And Satan is not actually a name. It is a meaning called the adversary. And there's a lot to unpack on all these different names and all these different metaphors and all of these different things. Cornerstone, I think Michael's mentioned it before, Cornerstone has something called Beyond the Weekend. And it's kind of like a podcast or video cast where they break down some of these interesting concepts from Scripture. So if you're interested, come see me afterwards. I can help you find it. Or if you go to cornerstonemi.org and you can find Beyond the Weekend starting tomorrow, and they talk more and break down more of the pastors about some of these different things. And it's really interesting. This one's really, really interesting. Not that they're not all, but I mean, this one's just things I didn't think about before, right? Just kind of almost like that murder mystery movie where you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming, right? So they're able to really break it down. But the name HaSatan is important to understand the whole picture we just painted, because he is the adversary. The enemy, the adversary. He is against everything. Everything. He is not for you in anything. We're not even on the same team. His goal is simple: to bring darkness and pain and suffering against everything God has created. That is his one goal in life. It's who he is. He is a spiritual being who is against. So this is where it gets interesting. Why is he this way? Why is he against everything? If you go back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2, did I miss part of Scripture? Or is there some scriptures or some scrolls that are missing when God created something evil? Do you think in Genesis 1 and 2, when God stepped back and declared it very good, that we missed the part that he said he created this evil persona, this evil thing to exist in our world? We don't know a lot about him, but there are three key scriptures that kind of paint a picture, kind of tell us a story of what happened to make him the way he is. And the first part I want to talk about is beginning with understanding that Satan was not his name to begin with. He was not the enemy to begin with. His name was Lucifer. And he's not what you might have been taught. I'm going to have Ashley come forward and read the first part of Ezekiel for us.
You were seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone adorned you. You were anointed as a guardian cherub. For so I ordained you. Ezekiel 28:12-13.
Okay, so we know from Scripture there are many types of spiritual beings in heavens. So there are the seraphim, the cherubim, the archangels, the angels, and there's a lot more to unpack there. And they all have different roles and a lot of interesting things. And again, they're going to talk about it on Beyond the Weekend if you want to learn a little bit more. But one interesting thing we found out was that Lucifer was a high-ranking archangel guarding the throne of God. And he may have even been the highest-ranking archangel. He may have been. And the other thing to think about is he is beautiful, just absolutely beautiful. And I think it's a hard thing for us to grasp about how beautiful Lucifer is and was, because a lot of us envision the devil as a scary monster, but I think Lucifer looked more like this than like this. And that's why he's so tempting and appealing, because of his beauty that he had, and could be, again, probably the most beautiful creation God had ever made. And this was also Lucifer's downfall, because something happened in heaven and Lucifer was removed.
How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground. You who weaken the nations, for you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High. Isaiah 14:12-13.
So what was Lucifer's sin? I will be like the Most High, he said. He wanted to be worshipped like God. Does that sound familiar? If we go back to Genesis, that's why Adam and Eve fell in the beginning. They wanted to be like God. And the tempter, it was so easy for this beautiful creature to be able to tempt them to see and be able to tempt them to deceive God, to be like God. He is so good at that. It's what he does. He tempts, shows us lies and mirrors and things that we can't see. And when Adam and Eve gave into temptation, they became like Lucifer. So let me ask you this. When we fall into temptation, who are we being like? When we're prideful and greedy, who are we being like? When we put physical beauty above everything else, who are we being like? The nickname ruler of the world, which I kind of pointed out before when we were going through these metaphors, it kind of fits. Because the world we're in right now, a lot of these physical things, a lot of this greed or defensiveness or not forgiving kind of falls and aligns with what Satan is doing. Satan wanted God's throne. He wanted to be like the Most High. So here's the final clue of what happened.
Then war broke out. In heaven, Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down the ancient serpent called the devil or Satan to lead the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. Revelation 12:7-9.
Okay, so what did we learn with what Ashley just taught us? Lucifer was an archangel who was created by God to hold one of the highest or even the highest power of authority in heaven. Okay, he was filled with fullness of wisdom and beauty. And in his pride and his desire to be like God, he swayed one-third of the angels in heaven. One-third of the angels in heaven to rise up and fight against God. And so then Michael, the archangel, led the war and protected God and Lucifer and one-third of the angels in heaven. That's a lot. One-third of the angels in heaven were hurled down to earth. That's Lucifer, that's the devil, and that is Satan. He left heaven. He went up against God and took one-third of the angels with him. I don't know how many angels there are, but I can tell you that is a lot to begin. So we talked about who he is. Now I want us to talk about who he's not, because I think a lot of times, I said this in the beginning, we tend to give him a little bit too much credit sometimes for some of the things that are happening. So the first thing I want us to talk about, he's not omniscient, which means all-knowing. I learned this one about 10, 15 years ago, and it's something that kind of has stuck with me. He cannot read our minds. He doesn't know our thoughts. He doesn't know what we're going to do next. He doesn't know those things. Only God Almighty, the all-knowing, can read our minds and understand and know what we're going to do. Satan cannot do that. He is also not omnipresent, which means ever-present or everywhere all at once. He's not able to be everywhere. A few years ago, we were studying and talking. We ended up talking about Satan or talking about the devil, and somebody said, I don't know if I've ever actually encountered Satan. Which is kind of interesting, because sometimes I think that I will say the devil is against me. I'll physically say that. But he said that, and it kind of made me sit back, and he explained it a little more. And he said, you know, there's no doubt we encounter the spiritual demonic, or those one-third of the angels that fell. We encounter them. But Satan is not ever present. He's not able to be everywhere. He cannot be causing war on the other ends of the earth and also be causing our car to break down. He's not able to be everywhere. Only God is. And finally, he is not omnipotent or all-powerful. And this characteristic is one I tend to see people giving to him a lot. Only God is omnipotent. He is powerful. He is tempting, but he is not all-powerful. He cannot make us sick. He cannot make our car break down. He can't sabotage us. But he is powerful. His temptation and influence is off the charts. His ability to have power only comes from us when we give it to him. It only comes when we give in to his master plan. Don't misunderstand. He is a formidable opponent. He is the number one enemy, the adversary. And he has waged war against the people of God. He was thrown out from heaven. And he has now, like I said earlier, had a target on all the backs of the people of God's creation who love God. He was defeated and decided to go after God. Here's the warning from the heavens. Therefore, rejoice, you heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has gone down to you. He is filled with fury because he knows that his time is short. And that's Revelation 12:12. In other words, without God, we are powerless in this battle. He has so much power, but God has all of the power. Here's thinking about hope that we have. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is also able to help those who are being tempted. Hebrews 2:14-18. And I want to leave you with this one. John 16:33. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. We now have an opportunity to take part in communion. On the night in which he gave himself up for us, he took bread, gave thanks, and broke the bread. He gave it to his disciples and said, "Take, eat. This is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." When the supper was over, he took the cup, gave thanks, gave it to his disciples and said, "Drink from this, all of you. This is the blood of the new covenant poured out for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me." You know, these next 5 weeks, we're going to be talking a lot about the enemy and a lot about bad things and the war and the spiritual warfare that's going against us. But one thing I want us to remember, that Jesus has already won. God has already won. There may be a war, but there's already a clear winner and a clear loser. And when God is for us, who can be against us? Right? Have a great week. Thank you.